Nam mô tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Nam mô tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Nam mô tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. One of the things that Ajahn Chah used to emphasize a lot was this aspect of being willing to learn from everything, or that everything is teaching us. And, you know, on a certain level it can seem ordinary or even trite, but it's actually just really essential in our practice to be willing to learn from our experience, learn from the things around us, learn to draw in the events of our life, and to be able to try to see them in the light of Dhamma. You know, our habit is so often to experience things and engage them as this is good and this is bad. Of course, the good we want to keep, the bad we want to get rid of. But to reflect on things from a place of Dhamma is more to consider how they, how does this arise? What's its effect? What can be useful within this, because even something, so one of the things that, of course, what the Buddha had us reflecting on, encouraging us to consider and reflect every day, I'm of the age, nature to age, I've not gone beyond aging, I'm of the nature to sicken, I've not gone beyond sickness, I'm of the nature to die, I've not gone beyond dying. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. And then on the nature of kamma, on the nature of the owner of my kamma, heir to my kamma, born of my kamma, related to my kamma, abide supported by my kamma, whatever kamma I shall do for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir. So the nature of our actions. So that, it doesn't get any more ordinary than that. This, the process of our bodies being subject to aging, sickness, death. But then we start to, to reflect on it and recognize that our bodies, minds, moods, they're changing. They keep shifting on us, and the investment of trying to, is this good? Is this bad? Getting pleased and elated about one thing, and getting frustrated and depressed about something else. Why do we keep doing that? What's the pull to that reaction? What's the pull to that kind of way that we keep going up and down with things? And what can we learn from it? It isn't that we're just going to shut it all off and push it away and not have to feel anything, but it's being able to bring it into the heart and reflect, what can I learn from this? What is this able to teach me? And, you know, thinking of Ajahn Chah, and so often when he would see us do something that's maybe inappropriate or unskillful, and he would, rather than say admonish or berate us, he would say, that's not beautiful. And you sort of think in terms of in our own experience and our the training that we're trying to engage in, and looking at ways that we can beautify, ennoble our hearts, ennoble our conduct, to engage in ways that actually are quite beautiful in the human condition. There's aspects of, say, of virtue and restraint. Those are really, you know, very beautiful standards of conduct. Training ourselves in mindfulness and composure, sort of anchoring and centering our attention. It's not just to turn us into sort of mindful automatons, but to give us a basis for living a human existence in a very beautiful way, and being able to be reflective and investigative. It gives us that opportunity to give our attention to the things that do create a sense of the beautiful in a human existence, or ennobling, let's say, another way of looking at it. And certainly for like training with Ajahn Chah, just having to be patient in so many circumstances, having a commitment to effort and diligence. Those are qualities that bring about a certain ennobling ourselves and in supporting each other. So this human condition is, say, it's difficult enough without finding more ways to frustrate ourselves or make a sense of dissonance, dis-ease within the heart. So learning how to attend to the circumstances around us, learning how to allow the things that we're experiencing to really teach us. Whether it's something on a mundane level of the nature around us, externally, one of the things we do is to recognize, to know, to understand, and to let go of them. Internally, we know, we recognize, we understand, and we train. It's part of when we take on this practice, take on this Dhamma, the ways that we can deal with external circumstances, and then how we deal with internal circumstances, and learning how to understand, see clearly the things around us, and to be able to let go. But internally, that same knowledge and understanding But then we turn it to training, training the heart so that it has this capacity to hold, to see, to be steady and balanced within the circumstances that we're experiencing. Because sometimes at different times we emphasize different things. It's like that quality of letting go, of relinquishing, releasing, of course, is an essential part of the path. But the willingness to recognize that the external and the internal are dealt with in slightly different ways. And there needs to be a bit more refinement with the internal and less expectation of the external. And it's like today where I took the Yomo group around, and the novices were working on their robes. Yeah, so that we go to the effort to sew our robes and dye them. Then you start wearing them, and then they start wearing out, so you have to patch them. And even before they start wearing out, you have to wash them to keep them clean. So you're looking after things. And then eventually, in the end, they fall apart and you have to replace them. And it's just the nature of external phenomena. But we're, say, internally, we're using that, say, sewing the robes, washing them, cleaning them, taking care of them, patching them, looking after them. We're using that to train the mind, learning how to train it so that we're attentive, observant, careful, patient, and not creating problems. Because we can, it's easy to create problems even out of something as seemingly mundane as a monk's robe, where we're trying to get the color absolutely perfect. You dye it this way and it doesn't quite come out, dye it that way and it doesn't quite come out. So you have to dye it again and get it absolutely perfect, and getting sort of obsessed with it. And it can be a great source of suffering. We used to do that with our alms bowls before stainless steel. We'd try to get the perfect firing on the alms bowl. And the Dhamma of contentment was sometimes completely lost. And it was an incredible amount of work. That desire to get something. And a lot of it was around the sense of me having something good, something beautiful, something distinctive. So that just in ordinary external things, we have to learn how to let go of them. Internally, we have to be willing to train the mind to see clearly, to really understand, to see the pain and suffering in attachment, see the delight and well-being, clarity that can arise from a well-trained heart. That turning attention to the training, and it's not far away, it's not distant. It's that quality of Buddho, or Buddha, being the one who knows, one who is awakened, to be ready to keep returning to that, lifting up the heart to knowing and awakening, that commitment to commitment to not suffering, commitment to ennobling the heart. It's something that we do. It's not something that we get or gain sometime later. It's something that we keep doing. Oftentimes, so much of the frustration in practice is trying to get the right method, the right technique, kind of trying to get the right result from our efforts, and in that constant measuring, trying to or expecting a certain result, waiting for it to happen. And there's a built-in frustration to that. Reflecting, investigating, of what are our assumptions in practice? Like assuming that we're trying to get something, say as a reward for our practice, trying to achieve a goal that we've set for ourselves, and there's an inherent frustration to that. There's an inherent suffering involved in that. And so it's important to investigate, what are our assumptions? What are we assuming? And it's not that we don't have any goal, the goal to be good Buddhist meditator is to be goalless. Recognizing what's driving our assumptions, and what are we expecting? What are we hoping should happen? Because there are times when we need to set goals for ourselves, but when we do it unknowingly, then oftentimes what happens is it relies on will. And we're trying to will ourselves and trying to force the mind into a certain expectation and model and mode. And that tends to result in suffering. When it's done consciously, we can apply that sense of desire. It's like in the four bases of success. Chanda is a basis of spiritual success, that desire, interest, motivation, effort. But it has to be very conscious, and you have to recognize, what kind of goal are you working towards? Another aspect of practice or approach to practice is paying attention more to, more to the source. So like the sense that this quality of peace and freedom is something that's inherent. It's like when the Buddha says that the heart is inherently bright. It only has adventitious defilements passing through it and clouding it. Then that's sort of looking at the practice and nature of mind as sort of a source-oriented practice. the Thai forest masters so often keep encouraging and reminding us to return to that quality of be the knowing, being the knower, being the puru, being the one who knows. Allowing that quality of buddha or buddho to establish itself or to return to that. So it's an opportunity to allow the inherent purity of heart to manifest as opposed to making it as a goal that we have to create and make and try to achieve. So it's a different emphasis. In the same way that, say, like goal-oriented practice can be, it has its drawbacks. If we're not clear and understanding our minds, we're not reflecting and investigating. You say, like, source-oriented, you go, wow, everything's pure already, I don't have to do anything. And so you don't do anything. You don't experience much either. So, but it's how do we hold it? How do we direct attention? And how's it help? What's the result? And certainly, you know, there's an appropriate time for each. But learning how to pay attention to what's the quality of heart? What am I experiencing? How am I directing attention? What is grabbing my attention? Where is it taking me? How do I find an anchor? This is this quality, again, this sense of coming to a place of knowing and balance. Finding that internal refuge of having an anchor in awakening, in knowing, and reflecting on Dhamma in the sense of that quality, oh, this is the way things are. Or it's like how much Ajahn Sumedho would keep reminding people to pay attention. It's like this. Because it isn't usually how we respond or how we... It's not sort of like, oh, it's like this. We tend... It shouldn't be like this. I want it to be like that. Why is it like this? And so, it's come back to the quality of knowing. It's like this. And then we've got an anchor to experience from. We can allow the things to teach us. We can learn from things. So that being open to the learning. And in order to be open to learning, we have to set aside those habits of attachment and reaction. Let's say the attachment out of desire, out of trying to experience some kind of gratification, a particular view and opinion that we have, self-perception. There's those classical ways that how the Buddha expressed attachment to sense desire, attachment to view, opinion, taking a stand on something, attachment to the practice and precept. If I just do this, this will create purity for me. Or if I just do it like that, then that's really what's going to make me peaceful. And attachment to the assumption of self, that self-position. I am this. This is who I am. This is myself. So that those seeing those habits of attachment, that's where that releasing, relinquishing, coming back to a quality of knowing and learning from that, letting it teach us so that we're increasingly we're taking a refuge in, and this is what our training, I would say, taking a refuge in training is being able to learn and see and understand, reflect, investigate, and to let these things that are normal or ordinary, they have the opportunity to teach us. We have the opportunity to learn. And it's just like the ordinary thing. It's like the changing of seasons. Fall comes. A lot of the trees, leaves fall. It's really barren. Then the rains come, creates fertilizer for the trees. The trees grow. The cycles continue, and that those same sort of external cycles of nature are the same cycles can be the source of our own wisdom and understanding. We can grow and really mature from the seemingly ordinary experiences in our life, in our existence. To offer that for reflection this evening.